And now, an exclusive preview of Drunk Wrestling History, the Montreal Screwjob.
Pro Wrestling Drunk History. I think I'm drunk, Jake.
I know you're drunk.
Bret Hart is the WWF Federation Champion.
Especially one of the heads of the couch.
All right, Sean, guys, come at me. At me on Twitter. Who gives a shit? I have 297 followers. Sean was a dick. Was Bret a dick? Maybe a little bit. Probably. Who knows? WCW is popping hog wild. You shitting me? Fuck WWF with all these safe wrestlers. I need to go work with Goldberg, the fucking football player. If it was called the Montreal fuck job, it wouldn't be as popular because you can't say that on national television. It's called the Montreal screw job.
His Triple H's sex life fit all in the Montreal fuck job.
Triple H's sex life has affected the WWE so much in the last 20 years. Stephanie's a pretty lady. That's all I'll say. Oh my God, Jake, I'm so sorry. I forgot to mention Bret Hart's from Canada. Is this everything you wanted?
This is everything and more. And
I'm glad I could help.
I think you nailed it.
Okay, great. I like how every time you say all right, I know it's you trying to muster just enough energy to make it through this episode.
Always. Yeah.
Hello, this is Tim Bell Pod. This is Macho Man Part 3. I'm Nick. I'm joined by Tyler Wood.
Oh, yeah.
And camp out, the man scout Jake Manning.
Oh, yeah. I guess is that how we sign on to the episode right there? With just randomly putting Macho Man, which we were very good. I'm very impressed with part one and part two so far, gentlemen. We've done a very good job of bringing out some new and interesting things and discussing topics that don't normally get discussed on a Macho Man podcast, most notably the fact that Lanny Poffo can suck his own dick. So I feel like we are putting out exclusive content in that manner. So let's keep it up here for today, Macho Man part three.
So this episode, this is the lost years of Macho Man Randy Savage. Last episode was the White Album. This is Wings. This is George Harrison playing the didgeridoo. These are the deep cuts. No one's ever like, oh yes, my favorite Macho Man match, Slamboree 95. Obviously, the feud with Jake the Snake is kind of the headliner. But, you know, at its core, it's still Macho Man doing pro wrestling. So on some level, it's all good. Except for, you know, the doomsday triple decker cage that everyone should feel shame for.
Which is less of a travesty than John Lennon getting together with Yoko Ono. So, yes. Like, he's still doing well in his lost years than most.
When we last left off, Macho Man had been put into retirement by the Ultimate Warrior. Just when we thought we would never see Macho Man again, on March 30th, 91, just days after WrestleMania 7 in real time, Macho was made an official WWE commentator on Superstars. And this leads to one... I feel like we say this every single thing Macho Man does, but this leads to one of the biggest things in wrestling around this time. July 6, 91 on Superstars, Macho Man hopped off the commentary table to get into the ring and propose to Elizabeth, and he hits her with that, "Will you marry me?" Which is like the most intense proposal probably ever.
Nick, I'm so sorry it wasn't the thing you were hoping for, which is, "Will you be my life partner?"
I remember watching this. It's not really live because it would have been syndicated, but I remember watching this in my grandmother's living room. And this was one of those times where my Uncle Jeff was just telling me how fake wrestling was. And like this whole Macho Man proposal is going on as he's just telling me how stupid wrestling is. But Macho Man's intensity by proposing to Miss Elizabeth made him stop and go, "All right, well, that was pretty real. That was all right. I accept that." So, like, Macho Man proposing to Liz got my uncle to kind of believe in wrestling for about 30 seconds.
Jake, is that how you propose to your now wife?
I'll actually how I proposed to my wife will actually be discussed on this podcast.
Oh shit.
Yeah, it will be discussed because it involves one of the topics of one of our episodes. So
did you suck your own dick?
I sucked my own dick. You're like, don't you want to get with a guy this talented? Hey!
All right. While this is all cute and sweet on screen, the truth in real life was that their marriage wasn't doing great, but we'll get into that a little more later. I know we always like to think the absolute worst from Vince, but I like to think he was like, I know what I'll do. I'll have these two crazy kids fall back in love on screen, and that will reignite the flame in real life and save their marriage. But then it just ended up being the cruelest thing imaginable, having to do love scenes with the woman who's tearing your heart out of your chest, because even when Vince tries to do good, he's incapable of it.
I could see that going either way, where he's like, I mean, I like him. If it goes well, that's good. And if it goes poorly, that's even better. Called playing with house money.
Add to the proposal, Randy would be back in a WWF ring about 4 months after WrestleMania 7. He was working with Sarge, Undertaker, and also like right after WrestleMania 7, he went over to Japan and did a few spots with Super World of Sports, right? The eyeglass thing?
Yes, the eyeglass company that Tenryu started and run these massive joint shows that had WWF talent brought over and booked. Like you would see the Road Warriors versus Hulk Hogan and Tenryu. You'd also see, I think, Hulk Hogan versus Stan Hansen. Then on the undercard, you'd have these really amazing matches with Ultimo Dragon and Shawn Michaels wrestling a singles match. You'd also randomly have Texas Tornado, Kerry Von Erich, taking on Ted DiBiase. But then you'd have like some high flyer from All Japan's junior division having a match. Like, it was just weird amalgamations. And people will say it was too weird for the Japanese crowd, but also part of the reason why it failed is because I believe the Japanese economy collapsed. So this eyeglass company no longer had fun money to play with anymore.
So it looks like they were like a little gun shy about putting Randy back in the ring on TV. He's working house shows, but there's this July 30th, 91 wrestling challenge match between Undertaker and Macho Man that's like lost the time. They didn't televise it at the time, and only pieces of it have made it anywhere. So it's like a lost Macho Man match that the internet should dig up somehow. All that builds up to SummerSlam 91 and the wedding between Macho Man and Liz. Jake, did you get married in secret? Because some bullshit always goes down in pro wrestling weddings.
I mean, I didn't want Caleb Connolly to put a snake in a box at my reception. But yeah, also, actually, you know what? To be really quite honest, yeah, that's why I did it in secret, because wrestlers ruin everything, and the less of them that knew it, the fucking better.
If you want to watch the most boring part of any wedding, the ceremony, they have that as the main event of SummerSlam 91. But then we get to the good part, the booze and food. But during the reception, chaos would erupt, so Macho and Liz decided to open their wedding presents at their wedding, which is fucking tacky. This is a wedding, not a 9-year-old's birthday party. However, one of those presents was a box with a snake in it. And sure, maybe their wedding wasn't registered at PetSmart, but Jake the Snake didn't fucking have to get them anything. This was a destination wedding, and he's just trying his best. I'm sure he was like, hey, I'm Jake, I'm the snake guy, they'll get it, they'll appreciate it. Sorry it's not a fucking microwave, Liz, because she freaked out. Liz is screaming over the snake present, which Jake took time to wrap, mind you. Undertaker saw his friend, Jake, who was just publicly humiliated in front of all their peers by Bridezilla, and decides to stick up for him. He hits Macho Man in the head with an urn. Roberts and Taker are kicked out of the wedding by Sid, who comes to the rescue, and Jake is like, I've been kicked out of better weddings than this.
Sid came in with a chair for no fucking reason, because Jake was like right on Elizabeth with the snake, and it comes in and you can tell it's like a little bit of a miscommunication. Like, it looks like he was supposed to like make some type of contact, but it just kind of stopped. And then Jake's like, oh, fuck, I'm going to back up. And it's kind of flat for a second. This whole thing's just a goddamn mess.
Yeah.
Yeah, for something like pre-tape like that, it should have been put together a little better, but that's what it is, I guess. Anything involving Sid. Like, you're like, that doesn't seem natural at all. Like, I don't know why that made any sense. Like, if you're going to stab somebody, get like a knife, not scissors. That's just weird. Like, things like that.
Following this, Macho and Jake are now locked in a blood feud over a toaster oven. Problem is, Macho has been officially retired, and WWF president Jack Tunney was holding him to it, except for, you know, all the house shows he's been doing. As a way around it, he started going to house shows and doing promos as Mr. Madness, which was clearly Randy, usually like shadowed out or super pixelated. Then we get to yet another Macho Man moment that is one of the most memorable moments in all of pro wrestling. During a TV taping of Superstars November 23rd, Jake the Snake beat a job guy. He hops onto the mic. He calls out Macho Man. Macho Man hits the ring. I think like a security guard grabs his leg, but Jake sucker punch him, runs him into the ring post, ties him up in the ropes, and then Jake pulls out a King Cobra, sicks it on the defenseless Randy, and he's like, hey, I bet you wish you had your own snake to fight this snake. If only someone would have gave you one as a goddamn wedding present.
This is my favorite Macho Man moment.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, by far, because this is the epitome of what professional wrestling is. It's a bunch of crazy people getting together, trying to elicit emotions from a crowd. And what better way? There's been so many times that we've, Undertaker's been buried alive 15 times. Vince McMahon's been exploded in a limousine. People have broken into homes with guns. Like, it's been done. And there's so much implied off-screen violence. It's like a fucking Looney Tune cartoon. You know what you didn't fake? We can't fake a snake biting someone's bicep on television in front of an arena of people. For the love of God, look at Eric Rowan's fucking spider thing that they had. The payoff to that thing that was under wraps for so long, and it comes out, it's this animatronic spider. No, Jake Roberts is rolling over in his snake pit right now because they have some fake spider on there when Jake is out there antagonizing a real fucking animal. PETA be damned.
There's a lot of great like art pieces, and I think somebody drew like this really nice canvas painting of this moment of the snake biting him, and there's really great photos of it. It's pretty iconic. But let's zoom out. Let's zoom out, because the next step is really what we're trying to get to, which is getting Macho Man Randy Savage reinstated to the WWF and get him wrestling again. That's the end of the story, and you know, in wrestling, typically you have an end. Or typically storytelling, you have an end that you're trying to get to. And you have the start, and then you fill in the pieces. What other fucking art form of storytelling do we have where you're trying to get to the spot of like, hey, I've lost a career match. I need to find a way to come back. Who else other than Vince fucking McMahon's like, no, what we're going to do, we're going to have you marry your ex-wife, and a snake's going to bite you, and then people are going to want to see you wrestle again. Like, that is the most batshit fucking crazy story all fucking time. But somehow, WWF, early 90s, it all fucking makes sense. And we're all like, man, this is super fucking cool.
Following this vicious snake attack, they reinstated Macho Man so that he could finally get his hands on Jake at this Tuesday in Texas, December 3rd, 91. Jake basically dominates the match, but Macho wins with an elbow in just under 6.5 minutes. But Macho wasn't done. He keeps laying it in on Jake. He gets the ring bell and tries to Ricky Steamboat him in the throat. One of the Hebners snatched the bell, though. This gives an opening for Jake to smash Randy with 3 DDTs. Then Liz runs down and Jake slaps her. And Jake said that made them cut this feud short because apparently Liz's parents freaked out. They were like furious at Randy for not protecting Liz. So he had to like get his revenge match in ASAP.
Successful angle?
Yeah, right?
Like, success, mission accomplished? Like, is that like the words we use here? It gets so fucking hot that we have to pay it off super fucking quick. Kind of didn't need to fuck around for 9 months. We just got to the point. I mean, success, right? I think that's what we label that. I think that's what we label that.
Something to be said, too, for all of Randy's hotel room choreography sessions. This one paid off.
The feud would get its blow off at Saturday Night Main Event 30, filmed in January, airing February 8th, 92. Another short, brutal match with Macho again getting the win with that elbow. At 92 Royal Rumble, wrestling rookie Ric Flair had won the title by winning the Rumble match, and Macho would be first up to feud with Ric.
Right? Because that's what I thought as a young child. I'm like, man, this guy's really old to be a rookie. Like, everybody that's like, oh, well, these people know that this guy wrestled here and did that. I'm like, no, not when you're like eight. You don't know. You need to kind of beat it over people's heads a little bit, like a little promo package or a discussion of it. Because I thought Ric Flair was like this new wrestler that just started wrestling. Because if you showed up on WWF television, I haven't seen you before, this is your first year wrestling. Like, that's what was in my mind. So I'm just seeing this old man go out there and woo in a fucking bathrobe saying he's the champ was very odd.
Jake, do you think there's anything to not mentioning your competition on television, even if it legitimizes a wrestler like Rick coming in, but would it be a detriment because you're putting over another promotion?
No, because you're putting over the fucking wrestler who works here now. Wow, I deflated your fucking argument in one fucking sentence, which was something that was a policy that WWE had for fucking decades.
They still kind of
have
it,
too. Made no sense. They still do. They really do. Especially to one promotion.
Yeah, Cody just left and did something. Now he's back.
Rick claimed that he had been in a prior relationship with Miss Elizabeth and showed some doctor pictures of the two. When all else fails in pro wrestling, just do a I want to bang your wife feud. Always works.
Talk about fake news. Like, we're all worried about AI and being able to doctor stuff and Photoshop and how, like, we have to, like, double check everything we see on social media now. Like, oh, that's AI or that's not real, and not understanding reality. My generation understands that because when I saw the photos of Ric Flair with Liz, I was like, oh my gosh, they did have a prior relationship because here are the photos. And they were actual fucking photos that they took. But I didn't realize that, like, oh, they took the photos because they're all working together and wrestling's not a real thing. But, like, it made me question my whole fucking reality.
Macho had the same critique on Rick that Bruno Sammartino had, in that he just does the same match over and over and over. And sure, it's good or whatever. But if you saw Flair in 89, you saw him in 96. This was a little weird for Macho to work around because he wanted to do something new every night.
But Ric Flair, and I never made this connection till right now, but this kind of takes a stand-up bit that I was always trying to get up off the ground, but I've never appropriately figured out a way to do it. Well, maybe like if I ever do stand it up again in front of a wrestling crowd, they'll get it. In that Ric Flair is classic rock radio. Every 56-year-old man you know listens to classic rock radio while they work outside on a roof or wherever else. Like, what person other than 50, 60-year-old men are like, you know what? I want to listen to Mississippi Queen for the 5,000th fucking time in my life. Oh, Led Zeppelin's my favorite. So guess what? I want to hear three of their fucking songs every day for 50 years of my fucking life. The only reason the classic rock radio should exist is for two men not to talk to each other on a car ride. That is the only reason for it to exist. I don't fucking understand it, but there are grown men like, you've been listening to the same exact fucking songs for 40 fucking years. And guess who fucking loves Ric Flair? 50, 60-year-old men, because they just like shit to be run over and fucking over and over and over again. Yeah, AC/DC, Back in Black. I've only heard that song 10,000 times, but I'll listen to it another 10,000 times. Heaven forbid I listen to any other fucking new music, and I'm offended that it's new and it's different, and I'll tell you it's not real music because it's new, as opposed to it being good or not. Fuck off.
What genre is Macho Man? I know his promos are Alex Jones on InfoWars.
gosh, what would Macho Man's be?
Fucking death metal? I don't know.
I was thinking
something
about metal.
Very heavy.
Yeah.
I would say Metallica. Okay. Like, he did a lot of really interesting and fascinating stuff, but then towards the end, it was just a lot of yelling and screaming and shit that kind of sounded the same. And as they get older, they can't really, like, update, but they're kind of stuck in what they are a little bit, you know? And that's where you get that So basically, any song that Metallica has right now is like TNA matches that Macho Man had. So.
Give me fuel. Give me fire. Give me that which I desire.
That's Metallica.
Yeah, see? Nailed it. I'm the king of analogies. Ric Flair is classic rock radio. Macho Man is Metallica. There you go.
While they were beefing on screen over Liz, this was around when Macho and Liz got officially separated. You usually have to get separated before you do a divorce. For the next several months, Randy worked full time working mostly Jake the Snake and Steel Cage matches on house shows. HBK or Sid would pop in from time to time. And then he's feuding Full Scale with Flair on TV. Then Randy and Flair meet at WrestleMania 8 for a world title match. And apparently this was not the original plan for WrestleMania. It was supposed to be Dream Match, Flair versus Hogan. But they did a house show tour with it that kind of bombed. Everyone freaked out and everything got moved around. So Flair's wrestling Macho Man.
Yeah, I don't. That's the WWE story. I don't know if I fucking believe that or not.
Same.
I would love for somebody to tell me the real fucking story, because it just doesn't feel right. I get that maybe it bombed, and I get that, like, Flair won't tell you it bombed. He'll just say, like, oh, we already did it on all the house shows. Well, do it for fucking WrestleMania, because guess what? I didn't see that fucking house show in Fresno, California. It'd make more sense if, like, hey, you know, Hogan didn't want to do the job, or Flair didn't want to do the job.
That's my theory.
That's kind of my theory, too. I don't know. It's all fucking, it's stupid. I would love for somebody to give me a real fucking answer about the WWE as opposed to what's out there, because I'm sure it's pretty interesting.
I mean, this is one of the biggest money-drawing matches of all time, and just throwing it away because, like, the people in Albany, like, kind of weren't into it, that's just, it doesn't seem realistic.
Yeah, it really doesn't at all, but, like, who wins that match? Because, you know, Flair doesn't want to give that up, and Hulk sure as fuck doesn't, and...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I call shenanigans on all of it.
But seeing it in WCW, were they wrong?
It's because it was at WCW.
I'll tell you what, though. It was good. Like, you watch those, the crowd went fucking nuts.
Yeah.
It was just weird when they did career versus career. Like, and then you got Mr. T involved. Like, it got weird that way. But, like, it was still a big goddamn match. And, like, some of the other times that they did it, it was a big fucking deal. Even, like, later years with NWO, like, it was still good. You know, it just got weird when, like, you know, Flair put his career on it and he lost. It just got weird that way.
Flair and Randy at WrestleMania. Dark Horse candidate for Macho's best WrestleMania match. Good, intense, fast-paced. Flair bonks his head on a guardrail. Very obviously blades. So he's, like, busted open throughout the whole match. And it's not the best. Tons of chaos with Flair's corner man, Mr. Perfect. Liz comes down. Macho survives a figure four. And he ends up rolling up Flair for the three and becomes a two-time WWF world champion.
Yeah, and I'm sure Flair, for him, is like, yeah, I'll put over Macho. Because in Flair's mind, like, I'm still a bigger deal than Macho. When really, like, look at it now, like, Macho, I think, is moving ahead of Flair in people's minds.
Yeah.
His followers, who's, like, the biggest wrestler. But it's the better match, for sure. Even though, like, Flair wants to do the same match over again. There's, you know, Macho's still putting stuff in there that's interesting enough. That it's cool and it's different than just a regular Ric Flair match.
And isn't that a dream match itself, though? Like, Flair, Savage, like, the two workhorses of their, like, respective, you know, companies, the NWA workhorse, the WWF workhorse. I would guess it's, like, the smarkier dream match than Hogan Flair.
I mean, as far as, like, wrestling content and product, yeah. You want Macho Man, Ric Flair all day, every day, where Hulk and, you know, Ric Flair are basically going to be a cheeseburger, but like a really good cheeseburger. Macho Man, Flair, it's going to be a three-course meal at a very nice restaurant. That's the difference.
Just the dessert kind of smelled like a fart in this one. Ending of the match, not quite clean.
Yeah, the ending, it was a little clusterfucky, but...
Hey,
what? Which goes back to the whole thing that Flair didn't want a job at the biggest stage
of
the year.
Yeah,
it goes back to that.
Right after winning his title, is off to Europe for a European tour where Macho met Shawn Michaels, now managed by Sherry for UK Rampage 92. And it's Shawn, it's Macho. This match is worth watching. You know, two guys who like care about the work. Randy wins, but the headline here is that this is Miss Elizabeth's last ever WWF appearance. Back in America, it was just a shit ton of house shows against Flair. He tossed HBK in there once in a while as well. As we headed to 92 SummerSlam, Ultimate Warrior was back. So over the last year or so, Warrior had this cycle of getting fired, coming back, quitting, coming back. But now he's back before he gets fired again. And they kind of built this respect and tension type of thing between Macho Warrior, who's doing a little triangle with Flair involved. Warrior even saved Macho from a perfect Flair beating. And then we go to SummerSlam 92 at Wembley. Jake, you've been to Wembley.
If you want to know what's funny, is I'm actually proof checking all in right now for Blu-ray. Because I'm sending it off for duplication right now.
You have the on the extra features, the backstage footage we've been touted so many times.
If you know the particular sequence to get it on the off menu Easter eggs, yes, it's actually on.
Warrior Savage 2 is 28 minutes long, which is 26 minutes too long for a Warrior match. Flair and Perfect come down for the finish. Of course, they, you know, get involved and hurt both guys. Macho goes for his top rope axe handle on Flair, who hits him in the knee with a chair, causing Randy to get counted out. Post-match, they beat down Randy until Warrior saves him, and they're forming some sort of mega power thing with a somehow more problematic partner than Hogan.
Yeah, I really feel like this was, they brought Warrior back, Warrior was off the gas, Warrior was getting back on the gas, but Warrior was still a problem now, because Warrior thought he was just going to go right back to the top, but he's clearly not as over as he was. So you're like, well, what can we do? We did this mega powers thing. We'll turn on him and we can come back to it. Just put him with Randy. Randy will make it work. You know, Warrior is a big commodity. What do we do? Just put him with Randy. Throw Perfect in there. Flair will make it good too. Like, fuck it. Let's hope something works.
The next match after Wembley at NIT was taped September 1st, 92. It aired the 14th for Primetime Wrestling, where Randy dropped the belt to Ric Flair. This is the Razor Ramon interference. It was like, what the f- did they just do a title switch on Primetime Wrestling?
Good thing they did, because apparently they fucked the finish and they made Ric Flair and Macho Man Randy Savage go back out there and redo the finish. Everybody, you know, everybody talks about like keeping the validity of wrestling. Well, fucking sending somebody out and doing the same exact fucking match over again and redoing the fucking finish seems like you're really giving it away for the live audience. But this was a, I remember Scott Hall talking about it in his shoot. This was the real wake-up call of who Vince McMahon was to him. He's, you know, he was new to the company. This is going to be like, he's getting ready to have this first big run in WWF. You know, he's only dealt with WCW and whatever that was at the time. And he's standing there in gorilla position watching Vince McMahon yell at Macho Man Randy Savage and Nature Boy Ric Flair and telling them to go back out there and redo the finish. And Scott Hall was like, man, this Vince McMahon's guy's got some balls. Like, that's goddamn Macho Man. That's Ric Flair. And you just told him how much they suck and you told him to redo it. This guy, you don't fuck with him. And dare I say, that's what you need to be a head of a wrestling company, because
you goddamn right.
wrestlers will fucking run over you. You need to have a strong personality. You need to be an alpha male, and you gotta fucking let them know, like, hey, when I say do it this fucking way, you fucking do it this way. Because if you don't, your ass may be gone.
The real reason Randy drops the title here is because his personal life is in shambles. It was around here that he and Liz get officially divorced. I've read August, September, October of 92, but just know it's like here-ish that it officially happens. To make matters even worse, back in wrestling world, he had officially formed the Ultimate Maniacs. We've all had that coworker that you see him on the schedule and you're like, fuck! Macho Man's tagging with them now. They'd pop into Saturday Night Main Event 31 to beat Money Inc. by count out. And they were supposed to put this like nice, neat little bow on this Macho Man, Warrior, Flair, Razor Ramon thing at Survivor Series 92. But here is where I believe a Warrior and British Bulldog got caught for their Ico Pro juice. And they were fired because this was steroid trial time.
Yeah, and also, too, there's like, you know what, these guys are kind of a handful. This is a pretty good getting off point, so have fun, guys. Bye.
Yeah, Vince will put up with you as long as you're drawing a shit ton of money.
And looking really vascular.
Yeah.
As kind of weird and anticlimactic as that is, the match is exactly the same. It ended up being Perfect tagging with Randy, who get a DQ win over Razor and Flair because they wouldn't stop double teaming Perfect. You know, like the ref gives you the count. It's like the only time I think I've ever seen a ref call a match there because they wouldn't get out. And it's like the lamest fucking ending ever. Mm.
Yeah, that whole like Survivor series is pretty lame, if I'm not mistaken. Like, one thing I used to do a lot on Thanksgivings is watch Survivor series, like, especially when I was like a single man, that's what I would do, is watch Survivor series or Starrcade. And I just remember putting that one in. I'm like, I don't think I've ever seen this one. And I put it in. I go, oh, now I see why. Not a lot of cool shit fucking happens on this one. Seems like a really weird time.
January 11th, 1993, Monday Night Raw began. And you can start to see that switch to the new generation. Like the Herculeses, the JYDs, the King Harley Races, they're all gone. Hogan is in and out. Warrior is in and out. And really, Randy is the only like key player left from the big 80s boom. And here is where they're really trying to push Randy out of the ring for being too old. And they just want to stick him on commentary. Arm of the WWE rewriting history propaganda machine, Bruce Pritchard, denies this outright. Randy and Lanny said this more than once, exact same thing. And then Eric Bischoff also backed this up.
Vince learned his lesson too, because since then, he refuses to let someone be too fucking old to work.
Meanwhile, AJ Styles is coming back, and he's 50, and he's jacked as shit.
Goddamn, so, is he 50 now?
I don't know. I'm making it up. I mean,
you're close. He's at least mid.
He is jacked as shit, though.
He's jacked as shit right now, and he's old. Like, Randy Orton has to be older than what Macho Man Randy Savage is when they forced him out of the ring for being too old. Randy Orton right now has to be like roughly that same age. Yeah, it's this weird thing of like being too old. And like you always hear Hulk Hogan like, yeah, around 88, I realized we had to wind this Hulk Hogan thing down because I'm getting up there in years. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? It's weird and it's odd. But yeah, I know Bruce talks about it a lot. Like Randy would always be politicking to get back in the ring and, you know, they'd give him a match working somebody young. And of course, Randy would like see it as like a kind of a nod, like, hey, you know, we know you can get a good match out of this young kid. And he'd be like, well, you know, you got to go to the old guy to get this guy over, you know, like Randy kind of like that was a spot, you know, and you could have used him a little bit more in that spot. But it seems like they didn't know what his spot was. So they just put him on commentary.
Randy Orton, 43.
Yeah, older than Macho was here.
Yep. AJ, 46. Macho at the time, 41.
And add to that, though, he's still impossibly fucking over. Like, if you look at the 93 roster with Hogan basically being a part-timer, he's the most over person on it. Like, your commentator can't be getting bigger pops than the fucking guy with the belt. And that's what was happening.
Yeah, when you go to a TV taping, as everybody knows, it goes to a Raw, SmackDown, a Dynamite, Collision. You know, usually, like, at the beginning of the show, they'll have maybe a couple pre-matches, the ring announcer will make some announcements, and then like, let's bring down your commentary team right before you go live. And, you know, they'll bring down like a JR or Jim Ross or a Taz, and sometimes they'll play them in music. And, you know, you get a pretty decent pops because everybody's excited about the show. But I can only imagine, like, let's bring down our commentators, and it's Macho Man Randy Savage! Huge reaction. All right, get ready for Monday Night Raw, and let's kick it off with Doink the Clown!
So 93 is also the year that Macho Man becomes the spokesperson for Slim Jim. This campaign was originally meant for Sam Kennison, if you know him, similar energy to Macho Man.
Could you imagine Sam Kennison be like, ow, 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 Slim Jim, you ruined my life, you degradable, awful bitch. Ah, you cheated on me, you flash fucking face of crap. I hate you with everything you mean, Slim Jim. That's why I'm going to snap into you, you awful, horrible piece of shit. Ah.
It seems like you need to be cardiovascularly compromise to be a Slim Jim spokesperson.
Yeah, you have to have the ability to put a vein on the side of your head at all moments in time.
Yeah, you need to have a blood pressure of too much.
WWF and Slim Jim actually kicked off their relationship with Ultimate Warrior doing radio commercials in 91. Macho would be their spokesperson for the next 7 years. The commercials stop. I know they do like kind of reference spots now, but the commercial stopped in 2000. And even 20 years later, there's nothing you could do to separate Macho Man and Slim Jim.
What? That's the sound of a rattlesnake in your earbuds. That's right, if you didn't want the stone cold Steve Austin experience, you need to shut them earbuds off right now. As a matter of fact, why don't you just take them ears and rip them off? Because if you don't want stone cold talking to you, then you don't deserve ears. Can I get a hell yeah? I'm gonna go ahead and assume you said it. I'm here today because I want to tell you about my friends over at Tin Bell Pod. Tin Bell Pod, Tyler Wood, Nick Alexander, and Jake, the Man Scout Man, and bringing you some of the best wrestling content on the internet. Now, can I get a hell yeah? While you're giving me a hell yeah, why don't you go ahead and pop over to their Patreon, go ahead and give a subscription, and why don't you hop your fat little ass right over to Pro Wrestling Tees and get a Tin Bell Pod exclusive t-shirt featuring all three of these beautiful men. Might be saying, what? What? Stone Cold, you think these men are beautiful? God damn it, I do. Now you get over there and you buy that t-shirt before I stomp a mud hole in you and walk it dry. Now let me get a hell yeah.
Despite the move to commentary, Macho is still wrestling from time to time. On the January 18th episode of Raw, Repo Man repoed Macho's hat, so we're in the new generation, which led to a match that aired the next week with Macho Man winning and getting his hat back.
So the frustrating part about this, you gentlemen being children at the time, they didn't explain repossession and loans from the bank and like why these things are being repossessed, right? This guy just stole things, basically, right? It was a prototype crime time.
Listen here, pal. Wrestling fans are poor. They're getting stuff repossessed all the time. They know who the Repo Man is.
Randy was also in the Rumble that year, finishing second to Yokozuna. And for the next couple months, he worked house shows against Yoko. But as far as like on air, always on commentary. March and April of 93, he went to USWA and faced Lawler for their title a few times. Later on, he also did some spots with Smoky Mountain. And like, if Randy wanted to hang it up, he's sure as fuck not going to a smaller town wrestling in front of 200-300 people. So it's like very clear he still loves the game and wants to wrestle.
Listen, it is television wrestling is not what it's cracked up to be, gentlemen. Like, I'm going to go ahead and say this. And if we have any young wrestlers out there that are listening, you know, the dream is to be like, I want to be in TV and I want to be famous and I want to be world champion and all these things, all the major promotions. It is not all it's cracked up to be. And if you're like not like one of the top five people in the promotion, it's a grind. It's not fun. And if they're like not, you know, featuring you every week, but you still got to show up to TV every week and it feels like all you're doing for your job is going to an airport and eating catering, it's kind of a miserable experience. And even if you're like kind of being used a little bit, everything's a certain time, you have to do this, and there's a lot of egos, a lot of other things that you're dealing with. So that's why you see a lot of people, and you know, like AEW, when they get the opportunity to take a booking for a couple hundred bucks, they'll go do it, because it really does kind of remind you why you loved it. Also too, like, you're probably the biggest star on the show if you've had any TV time, and you kind of get to do what you want. If you go a minute over or 30 seconds over or a minute under, like, nobody cares. They're just happy you're there. There's less to worry about. There's less to think about. There's less to do. In some aspects, it's easier. You're not worried about how you look. You're just worried about having a good match and having fun. I mean, that's really, you know, really what it is. And for someone like Macho Man, who's already climbed the biggest of mountains, and now he's, you know, showing up to TV every week and talking into a microphone and eating catering, and you want to be in the ring, places like Smoky Mountain, USWA are probably keeping his fucking sanity at this time.
Macho was on commentary for the Las Vegas WrestleMania 9, and around here, like, even his house shows, they're getting cut like way, way, way down. In July, Macho had an IC title match against Shawn Michaels, and Randy had this whole thing where he like wanted to put Shawn super over, do his last, like one last epic run with Shawn Michaels, putting him over at WrestleMania, creating a megastar, the guy who took out Randy Savage, but they shut it down. And I think that really gets the wheels spinning as far as Randy, like, it's time to get the fuck out of here. Shawn Michaels, his career turned out fine.
But also, too, it's like Randy's like, look, I'm not asking to get back in the ring so I can be champion and be the top guy like Hogan is over here. I want to make one of these these guys like a mega star for you. I want to give him the best match possible. And you're not even letting me do that. Like, yeah, that really is the last fucking straw. Like, I'm looking to give back in the biggest possible fucking way for somebody. And you won't even let me do that. That's got to be where it goes. Yep, I need to find an exit plan. I got to figure out a strategy. I got to find out where the back door is.
Nothing changes either. Because you fast forward to 2019, 2020 with Brody Lee. Vince just has a hard-on for things going his way. You want to leave? I haven't decided I want you to leave. You're not going to fucking leave. You want to put somebody over? I haven't decided you're going to put somebody over.
Randy worked sparingly over the next several months, and then he eventually got into his final WWF feud. So Good Guy Crush had gotten fucked up by Yokozuna, putting him out of action for months. Bad Guy Crush comes back blaming Randy for this, and they got into it October 18th, 1993 Raw. Cut to Macho making his pay-per-view return at 93 Survivor Series. His team gets the win, but Randy is eliminated when Crush comes down to talk shit, distracting him. He gets rolled up. To continue the Crush feud, Crush tosses Randy out of the 94 Royal Rumble, and that hate sizzles all the way to WrestleMania 10, where they meet in a Falls Count Anywhere 60-second return to the ring match. And the ending of this is where Macho tries to hang Crush upside down and he falls immediately. Crush sells that anyways and Macho wins.
I mean, if you're not going to let me put over Shawn Michaels, I guess I'll put over Crush because he seems like a good dude. But like at the same time too, like we all would much rather have you put over Shawn Michaels than Crush. But I get it, you know, it's probably also Macho's like, all right, well, you probably don't want to put over Shawn Michaels because he's a small dude, but you let me put over a big guy. All right, this big monster. I guess Vince will let me do that. I mean, that kind of fits with what he wants.
Yeah, Crush was like a boy's boy, or, you know, he like very loved and respected in the back, but just he wasn't going to be Shawn Michaels. I believe it is around here-ish, give or take some weeks or months, that Hulk Hogan had put Randy in touch with Eric Bischoff. Obviously, Randy wanted to get paid for his talent, but WCW was going to give him the chance to keep wrestling, so his foot is officially out of the door. Following Mania, he's grabbing a few house show dates here or there with Diesel, Crush, and he makes his final WWF pay-per-view appearance at SummerSlam, where he was like the master of ceremonies. His last house show is September 13th, 94, and they've always kind of like portrayed Macho as just like no-showing one day. And I think that is kind of the case because they actually still had him like booked for an appearance. But yeah, Macho Man Randy Savage, who had helped build WWF, was part of some of the biggest moments, greatest matches, biggest memories. He's gone.
That's got to hurt so much, knowing that if you were given a chance, you could probably go up to the level of Hulk Hogan. But here and into the future, Randy never surpasses him.
But if he would have stuck around in WWF and got a run where he's like having matches with a Shawn Michaels or a Bret Hart, and Hulk's not there at that time, and if Macho's having some really quality matches and putting people over and looking good doing it, then all of a sudden like there's this sense of people starting to look like, well, Hulk Hogan's kind of repetitive, but Hulk Hogan's out here just having banger after banger and amazing match after amazing match and amazing angle with amazing wrestler. Like, all of a sudden, Hulk, who's still playing the hits right now, kind of shifts in your mind who's really the better wrestler. Like, there's that opportunity to do that, at least for the very hardcore wrestling fans, which kind of already knew that and felt that way about Macho. But it really might open the eyes of pretty much more wrestling fans.
We could have got, like, some crazy shit out of this era. Like, Macho versus Owen, Macho versus Bret, Macho versus Shawn, Macho versus Razor, 1-2-3 Kid. I'm sure I'm leaving someone out, but like there could have been like some peak fucking wrestling come out of this.
Oh yeah, like 95, 94, WWF, everybody talks shit about it because occupational error, but they had some good fucking wrestlers there. Dax just talked shit about somebody online a few months ago, like, oh, well, I got to see T.L. Hopper, and now you guys get to watch someone like me wrestle. And then people are like, fuck you, Tony Anthony was a good wrestler, Dirty White Boy was a really good wrestler. And that's true. Like, the guys that had those weird occupational gimmicks were actually good wrestlers, and Bret Hart recognized that and had amazing matches with Brad Radford and Jean-Pierre Lafitte. keeping Macho there and having those crazy matches you just mentioned. They were impossible. And the abrupt leaving, I guess, is why we never saw Macho Man ever brought back into the fold or there any type of forgiveness, because there's always been that discussion of why Macho Man? Why was Macho Man not brought back? Why was Macho Man just absolutely not, don't ever bring him back again? But, you know, Stone Cold, who no-showed a show, was brought back just fine. Hulk, who left and then talked shit about WWF the entire time he was over at WCW, he was allowed to come back. Same with Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, who you perceived as trying to tear the company down when really, in fact, they were just looking for more money and they begged not to leave, but you forced them out the door and forced their hands. But Macho Man, nope, we can't bring you back at all. It's just very weird. You know, there's always those wild rumors about Stephanie McMahon, which seem crazy and stupid because there's no other rumors of Macho Man doing anything inappropriate like that with anybody at all whatso-fucking-ever, or any hint or inkling or in the fucking slightest. There's zero smoke around that. There's just this one fabricated thing that's out there. I've always had a wild theory about it in that Macho Man was just so close to Vince that when he left, it hurt more.
Mm-hmm.
Where Vince liked Hulk. They respected each other, but there was a bit of an arm's length with Hulk. Like, we're businessmen, we do business here, where I feel like there was a sense of Vince opened up personally to Macho Man. And for Macho Man to up and leave, it just, there's so much pain and so much hurt. And as any of us who've seen the Andre the Giant documentary or Twitter, which has been a meme for quite some time, Vince McMahon does not handle emotion and hurt feelings very well. And when something hurts, he just pushes it away. I think that's kind of what happened with Macho Man. Like, it hurt him. I feel like Liz and Randy knew some of Vince's deep, dark secrets. And for them to leave like that hurt him. And he can't deal with it. And that's why he never wanted them around again. Which, for those of you listening who don't know the rumor that went around for years, because let's not think that everybody that listens to this podcast knows the rumor that Macho Man had an inappropriate relationship
allegedly.
With a teenage...
Allegedly.
Allegedly had an inappropriate relationship with a teenage Stephanie McMahon. That is the rumor, and it doesn't make any fucking sense.
First of all, I'm more willing to believe the Steph thing than Vince McMahon having genuine human emotions. But this is clearly fake and not true. I tried to track it down. The first appearance of this rumor was in year 2000. That's when it first showed up on the internet. I think it's someone taking the piss. And, you know, if she wasn't 18, it's not a great joke because, you know, that's a lot of illegal shit in there. She was 18 that September. But it's just an online thing. There's no proof. There's no, you know, there's nothing to it.
Well, I'm going to push back on you saying that Vince McMahon can't have an emotion. I feel like he can. He just handles them poorly, which makes him a shit human being. So I'll challenge you on that thought that, yes, he can have feelings, but because he has no idea where to put them and doesn't know how to process them, that's what makes him a shitbag human being that makes you question whether or not he has feelings.
Vince would much rather tear every quad he has several times and shit his pants on national television and be angry than tell someone he loves them.
Or convey to somebody that they hurt him and hurt his feelings. Mm-hmm.
Sociopaths can mimic feelings. They can't have them.
I don't know if he's a sociopath. I would say psychopath. Crazy person, narcissist. They have feelings.
All right. Either way, he's out of there, and he made his way to WCW, and this whole, at least the early part of this run, is this constant duality of, fuck yeah, Macho Man's back in the ring, and oh shit, he's doing WCW creative. That's not great. He debuted December 3rd, 1994, on WCW Saturday Night, cutting a promo with Mean Gene. And just like his first promos in 84 with WWF, he was also calling out wrestling champion Hulk Hogan.
And it went a little something like, Hulk Hogan, we coming for you.
Something like that. Maybe a word or two. Maybe a word or two needed to be. No, Hulk's going to say the word, so it's okay. He'll fill in the gap.
Randy made his first WCW pay-per-view appearance at Starrcade 94. like, you know, the WrestleMania of WCW. And you know what the fucking main event was? Hulk Hogan versus The Butcher, a.k.a. Brutus Beefcake. Like, that's how hard WCW was sucking the dicks of any WWF person. Immediately, first chance they got, less than a year with the company, two WWF guys headline a fucking Starrcade. And no hate to Brutus or anything, but like Harley Race headlined Starrcade. Ric Flair, Sting, Dusty Rhodes, they headlined Starrcade. Like, have some goddamn self-respect.
Different company, Nicholas. It's no longer NWA anymore. It is WCW Starrcade. And of course, you know, Hulk's pitching the idea of like, well, you know, brother, there's this long history with me and Beefcake. We've been friends. We traveled the road together. And you know, everybody understands that. So this big, long story. But they didn't tell that fucking story. So
no.
And nor did anybody really care about that story. And nor could even Brutus articulate that fucking story. So, yeah, you got what you got.
Macho saves Hulk from a Dungeon of Doom beating. Hulk gives some of the worst chair shots in pro wrestling history. So despite hating Hulk in real life over us, you know, he kind of blamed the part of the Liz split on Hulk. The Mega Powers were somewhat reunited.
Nick, you said that Hulk set up Macho with Eric Bischoff, right?
Yeah.
So there's got to be at least like, if they hadn't buried it at that point, that is at least Hulk going like, hey, handshake right here, I'm trying to help you out.
The way it's laid out anyways, the hate is coming from Randy. Hulk never like hated Randy Savage. He always wanted it to be okay, and Randy just like held a grudge.
Gotcha.
Even if they still hated each other, Randy's just so goddamn professional. He's not going to bring that into work. Like, he's going to, if he's being Hulk's best friend on TV, he's going to be Hulk's best friend on TV. So by the new year, Randy's working house shows with Avalanche, Earthquake, if you're nasty. His first tape match was versus Arn Anderson in a 10-minute draw for the TV title on a Saturday night, January 10th, 95, which is pretty fucking good. Hogan and Savage faced Butcher and Kevin Sullivan at Clash of Champions 30. Super Brawl 5, Randy tags up with Sting. So that is, you know, that's kind of in like the dream match realm of like, oh shit, there's this WWF guy tagging with the WCW guy. They beat Big Bubba and Avalanche. Lots of fun spots. Like, Bubba was never not great. March at Uncensored, Savage beat Avalanche via DQ when a fan ran into the ring who was Ric Flair dressed in drag before Hulk Hogan makes the save. And that leads to the WCW feud between Savage and Flair as they faced each other over the next several pay-per-views.
Also before dressing up in drag was a cancelable offense for someone like Ric Flair, but don't worry, Ric Flair can't be canceled no matter how hard we all are trying.
He's like a bank. He's too big to fail.
Well, that's what all the ladies say. Woo!
So the feud pressed through Great American Bash in June. Savage lost to Flair when Flair stole Angelo's cane. So Angelo's mixed in this. They attacked him at one point. There's a rematch July at Bash at the Beach where Randy beats Flair in a lifeguard lumberjack match. And then just like Randy was there for the start of Monday Night Raw, he was there for the start of WCW Nitro. He's on episode number 2 beating Scott Norton.
Wait a minute. You said you want to blow through some of this Ric Flair stuff. You are not talking about one of the biggest things to fucking happen. This fucking lifeguard match? Wonder why it's a lifeguard match? Because we're doing a fucking episode for Baywatch as well too at Bash to the Beach. Fucking Macho Man, Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, and Vader on fucking Baywatch. You're gonna blast through that? Absolutely not. Fucking absolutely fucking not. There is video evidence that Macho Man Randy Savage and Pamela Anderson were on screen together.
What, I forgot what your obsession with Baywatch.
What better piece of fucking video to explain the loves of 14-year-old Jake Manning than that piece of celluloid that exists in this world? That is goddamn cinema that you want to just rush right through. I try and cut you off, but you're already on a Diamond Dallas Page feud in WCW before I can jump in. Put a little goddamn respect on Baywatch's name.
I love how WCW firmly embedded itself in pop culture. Like, everything surrounding WCW at this time. Fucking, there's this, there's RoboCop, there's fucking Dennis Rodman coming up in a few years. hey man, RoboCop movie coming out. Send him down to the ring. Who gives a fuck?
Fall Brawl in September. Macho did a War Games match, which is another one of those fun things. A WWF guy is now doing a very NWA thing, War Games. Hulk Lex, Randy Sting beat the Dungeon of Doom. There's a spot in this match where Lex accidentally hits Randy and they get into a fight, and that's going to set up Randy's kind of next feud with Lex. I think they're teasing a heel turn, and then Randy, who's face. And that takes us to 95 Halloween Havoc. Yes, 95 Halloween Havoc, home of the Monster Truck Sumo match. The Giant falling off of a very large building, and the Yeti slinging some dick. WCW was never not going to go out of business. Macho Man on this, he beats Zodiac, who is now Butcher, who is Brutus. He gets a match with Luger that night, which Randy wins. But the night wasn't done. In the main event, Hulk Hogan faced the Giant, who was totally fine after falling five stories. Tons of Dungeon of Doom fuckery, which draws out Luger and Savage for the save, but then Lex turns on Savage to further that feud, and then Yeti comes out for that epic pro wrestling dry humping. Tyler, have you seen this? First of all, have you seen the monster truck thing? And second, have you seen this main event?
I have seen highlights of both.
That's all you need to see.
Yeah. This era of WCW, like, I wish I did harder drugs and I wish I had been around for it. It seems like it was a lot of fun if you were just, like, hammered the whole time.
But here's the thing. Why? What I'll never understand, and I work with Paul White. Maybe I should ask him one of these days. Why wasn't Hulk the one who got pushed off the arena?
Didn't work for him, brother.
Well, but then he could come back like, I fell off Cobalt Hall and now I'm here to fight for the championship.
The only way Hulk would have done it is if he got pushed off the building and then we're waiting for a splat. And what do you see rising up above the building? It's Hulk Hogan hulking up because he's not going to job the gravity, goddammit.
But that would be the interesting thing. Like, is Hulk Hogan going to defend his title? What's he going to do? And he comes out as opposed to Hulk dressed in all black. I'm like, is Hulk the bad guy now because he just committed murder? And he's like, something went down that wasn't supposed to go down, brother. Like, you're trying to add a level of realism for somebody falling off a fucking building. Like, just make Hulk Hogan fall off a building and now he's got to fight the Giant, and then he tries to valiantly come back, but he just fucking can't because he fell off a fucking building. So then the Dungeon of Doom is trying to destroy Hulkamania while it's on its knees, and that would have made more fucking sense than weird fucking black glove Hulk out there, and fucking also made his beard blacker too. Like, I don't know. It was just fucking weird.
If WCW framed half the shit they did like Chikara, like, this is fun and silly and self-aware, then a lot of this is great. But no, they were like, face value, this is supposed to be super cool, and then it wasn't, and then it makes it extra bad.
Well, like I said, Hulk Hogan falling off a building and then coming back and fighting a giant. That
I would have been more and more with that too. That's great. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's more in line with the fucking characters we have. You know what? Next time I ask Paul White when he's sitting in catering playing cards, I'm going to fucking ask him. I'm like, dude, this is going to be the weirdest fucking question ever. And don't hit me with your car like he almost did the last time.
So then Randy went into the first ever, and surely not the last, World War III. Randy survives the first ever 60-man three-ring battle royal for the vacant WCW title. Wins the big gold belt, so it's just another tick on his resume.
Would you say this is his peak in WCW, or is the next title win his peak?
I think it's this one. I really do, even though I think business was probably bigger and hotter for that second one. I feel like it's this one. We're not too far removed from peak Macho Man, and this is old school proto Macho Man, where I think the later versions were his Macho Madness and, you know, and the NWO Macho Man, like that era. This is just, it still feels like Randy. It still feels like 1989. It still feels really fucking cool. And it still works in this WCW universe, which feels like it is WWF 1988, but in WCW 1995.
Mm-hmm. And then kind of how Hulk sort of jumped all up in the way of Randy's first WWF title win. There's this big shit show where, like, Hulk went under the bottom of the rope, yeah. And it's like this big controversy because he didn't get eliminated. So Macho doesn't get to just win his title and raise it into the air and celebrate. It's Hulk's in there going, me! And he'll do it again. Spoilers.
This is what I was asking about earlier when it was Macho not able to get out from under Hulk. Not even in a way of like he was, you know, not, he's a better wrestler and the crowd liked him more, but like it seemed like Hulk was always the pinnacle. And even if Randy was doing everything he could to rise up to that level, everybody involved is just kind of like, hey, relax. Hulk's the top guy right now. Yeah. And it's just going to be that way.
Well, that shit flies in 1988 because he was the top guy. But like now it's like Hulk is just playing the goddamn hits. Whereas Macho is like still fucking going. He's one of the fucking better wrestlers you've got in this fucking company. Five tool player, promo, look, everything, in ring ability, drawing ability. Like he's the fucking guy and he's still working just as hard as he was back then. But Hulk is just playing the fucking hits. And it's tougher to make that argument like, well, you know, Hulk's the guy when it's like, well, motherfucker, it's my time now.
He was phoning it in so hard during this time of WC. So much.
Totally agree. And I grew up a Hulkamaniac and don't get me wrong, Hulk Hogan from like 85 to 89, the fucking biggest fucking star in wrestling ever at any period in time, only rival to Stone Cold Steve Austin in the late 90s. The only person that he even comes close or even surpasses. You can make your arguments however you want to fucking make it, but definitely one of the biggest ever stars. But WCW Hulk, like, yeah, he's a big fucking star, but he's phoning it in so much. Like, it is all about the money right here.
How did you guys feel about it at the time?
I was young enough to just be like, it's Hulk Hogan, yay. I wasn't like, wow, he really isn't laying that in at all, and he's going real slow, and this is not his best work, objectively. Promos suck, like, everything. He just phoned it the fuck in.
Well, I think at this time, like, I was like, yeah, yay Hulk Hogan, but then, like, Macho Man comes, I'm like, oh, no, this is the real shit, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how I felt. Like, that's how I felt at this period of time. Like, yeah, Hulk's cool, and I'm paying attention to what he's doing, but goddamn, I'm glued to the fucking TV set to watch Macho Man at this time.
They're trying to hype up this Macho Man versus Hulk match, but that doesn't happen because Randy drops the belt off to Flair at Starrcade after some horseman interference for Flair's 12th title win. Then on January 22nd, 96, Nitro, Flair defended the world title against Randy on the first match of the show, which is kind of fun. Arn interferes, he takes a swing with a loaded fist, accidentally hits Rick, Randy hits an elbow and wins his second big gold belt. And then right there in the fucking ring is Hulk Hogan. Like, immediately. Like, it's, like, comical at this point. They have another promo, clearly setting up a Macho-Hulk match, which, again, didn't happen. Macho brings in Liz as his manager at Super Brawl 6, who turns on him, giving Ric Flair her shoe to hit Randy with in a steel cage match. And Rick beats Randy for the title.
I told you. I told you I slept with her. I told you so.
Y'all didn't believe me. You didn't believe old Ricky Flair. I'm telling you, old Ricky, he done slid up in all that. That's what I did, baby. I know that sounds gross for a 70-year-old man, but if you think it's gross, come on back to my hotel room, 18-year-old girls. Like, come on, let's go hang out. I'll tell you about all the good wrestling times. That's what we'll do, baby. We won't do anything scandalous. But no, this shit was fucking cool. But this is clearly like Randy going, hey, Liz, you want to make a little extra money? Like, this is clearly him looking out for her, thanking her, rewarding her. Like, hey, this is an easy paycheck. Why don't you come and make this money? And she's like, sure, why not? And Liz turning on Macho Man after everything that Macho did to her. We never explored how much that makes sense storyline wise. But yeah, looking back at it, it makes all the sense in the world. Like, if you had that baggage and that story to tell, like, it makes total fucking sense of her to get with Ric Flair and be like, look, I know what Ric Flair is from the onset. You're the one that did all these things to me. I mean, you really could have stoked that fire a lot, but like seeing her with the horseman, I remember that being like it was a big deal. It was pretty fucking cool. It was pretty interesting and really got some believable sympathy on Macho Man. Like, it really paints him as a sympathetic character, and they use that a lot in different phases of, you know, Savage's career. Like, they could use Liz to get sympathy or get heat on Randy. you know, dare I say, like, better than the WWF.
Mm. We wouldn't happen like to be giving WCW booking credit here, would we?
I feel like when it came into some of the, like, the later stuff and some of, like, I remember there just being, like, an interview where she, where Macho Man had to watch it in the entranceway with Mean Gene Okerlund. Like, she kept this, and she was, like, on a swing or something like that, explaining why she did what she did or explaining why she, like, missed Randy or why she turned on Randy. There are a couple of, like, really serious, believable notes to Liz and Randy during WCW. Like, some stuff that was definitely, like, Vince would never would have done. Like, that doesn't fit in our cartoon agenda. But, yeah, there was some good stuff there. And it would have been interesting in this world where we try and blur the lines as much as possible and bring in as much reality as possible, how you could have booked that even more. It would have been fascinating.
So next up was 96 Uncensored, which we discussed on the Zeus episode, which is quite literally the worst match of all time. And it's so funny, the juxtaposition, because the next fucking thing up is Bash at the Beach 96, possibly the greatest moment in wrestling history. We all know what happens here. It's formation of the NWO, but right there, front and center, taking that leg drop is the Macho Man, Randy Savage.
Also, too, like, these guys are not really sure if Hulk's going to do the turn or he's going to back out at last minute. So you're just going in there and, like, well, either Sting's coming out or Hulk's coming out, you know, or Sting's going to turn on me and do this. And just Randy's, whatever happens, happens. Oh, Hulk's coming? Okay, we're going to do this one. Well, this should draw some money. I can imagine Macho just lying there and knowing, like, hey, something really big's about ready to happen here. Like, he had to know in that moment when it happened, like, oh, we just changed wrestling. And yeah. I was in the middle of it, which, really, to be quite honest, that's all kind of Randy ever wanted, you know, from WWF before they let him go, is let me be a part of something. Let me do something special. And here he is. He's doing something special.
This is Micah's point. Some of you old time listeners may remember Micah. What if Randy would have no-sold the leg drop? Hulk Hogan has betrayed WCW! But Macho Man seems fine. Like, just completely ruined the whole fucking angle. Like, just a fuck you to Hulk Hogan. Walks out. Billions of dollars of business just down the tube.
I mean, just look at him like, that don't work for me, brother.
Yeah!
I'm gonna snap your fucking legs off. How about that?
So Macho would be one of the WCW leaders in the war with NWO. He lost to the Giant at Fall Brawl 96 with NWO interference. That's probably always going to be the case. And then that takes us to Halloween Havoc 96, and we're finally going to get Macho Hogan WCW match. And this is Hulk with his dumbass three ninjas, hair plugs, beats Randy with just a pile of fuckery and interference. But after this, star of Pro Wrestlers vs. Zombies makes his WCW debut, Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Why was that ending such a clusterfuck? And I don't just mean from, like, the end of the match. Why did they have such an awkward back and forth on the mics? And then the pay-per-view ended with them arguing. Like, in the middle of a back and forth. Why?
Jake.
I guess not the worst thing that's happened in WCW in that year that makes the least amount of sense, but good lord, that was a flat ending to a pay-per-view. I mean, Rowdy Piper debuted, and that was big.
You see, Kat, keep in mind at this time, I wasn't buying WCW pay-per-views, so when fucked up shit happened on the pay-per-view, and they were just showing screen caps, it sounded like the most amazing thing ever, because you could make whatever narrative you want the next day. So to me, this was a great fucking moment, because I saw it on Nitro and screenshots.
Have either of you, Nick, you probably rewatched it recently, right?
Yes. My thing is, it's Roddy, it's Hogan. We're just going to call it out there, brother. You know, we're just going to improv on the mic. And sure, both of them are for sure talented enough to do that. But sometimes it's better to maybe talk about that shit before and you know, maybe plan some shit out, because, you know, that's why there are TV writers. And
just directors. Directors, they're like, what camera shots do we need to get and what's the fucking end? And I need you to end on this fucking point before we go off air. Valid questions.
And Roddy was like, seemed like genuinely annoyed that Hulk was like trying to cut him off before a point was made. And then, like, you keep listening to it, it's like, neither of you made a fucking point. You're going to fight each other. Yes, it's goddamn professional wrestling. What's the point? The crowd reaction, I don't know if it was so muted because maybe everybody's over Roddy at the point, or just like they're tired after a long and confusing span of WCW.
Yeah.
Or if the fact that bagpipes were played for about 20 minutes before he walked down kind of gave away that it was going to be Rowdy Roddy Piper. How many other fucking people come out to bagpipes?
Yeah, it had to be some crowd fatigue there, because Roddy was pretty much always over. But it's just the clusterfuckness of this whole thing just subtracted any coolness factor.
Well, I saw Piper and Hulk do an altercation on an indie show like a decade or so ago, and that shit was awkward as fuck. They just stared at each other, and Roddy like said later, like, that's what I was trying to do. I was trying to create tension by just staring at a fucking man. I remember fans got to a point where like, do something, and they didn't, and they just hugged each other and walked out. It was fucking weird, but Roddy thought it was the most ingenious thing ever. So like I like Roddy, I respect Roddy, but like also let's not look at Roddy with rose-colored glasses, okay? Like there's some warts there, all right? You can love him with all your warts, like I do, but let's know that there's some foibles, okay? But this is also the match, if I'm not mistaken. Didn't Hulk come out with a hairpiece and then, yes, Macho Man put it on? Yeah, greatest fucking thing to ever happen in fucking wrestling. that should be a GIF or a video file on Twitter every fucking month. We keep putting out the dumbest shit all the time, but Macho Man walking around with Hulk Hogan's toupee on, that should be fucking done. I remember seeing that and I think subconsciously going, oh, Hulk understands how to be a heel. I think, you know, you go through the whole thing, you hate Hulk Hogan, but then there's like, what's going to happen? And then, like, Hulk's coming out, and it's like, I got hair now. Like, looking back at it, you're like, oh, no. Hulk was dying to be the Southern fucking heel. And I wish we would have saw more of that. You see that a lot of that in the beginning of the NWO. But then all of a sudden, like, oh, the NWO is cool, and we make a lot of money. We can't look dumb. There's some of that came into it, where I feel like if Hulk would have leaned more into what he was leaning to in the beginning of all this, we could add like some really cool fun shit.
After this, Randy would sneak in a few house shows before his WCW contract ran out. And I think right here they were like having some problems landing on the correct number. So Macho takes a little time away from the company. And that is where we will pick up on final episode of season 4 at Macho Man Part 4. Anything before we get out of here?
Nope, just excited about part 4. It's going to get real weird, but there's going to be some cool shit with Diamond Dallas Page.
Yes.
There's going to be some cool shit with Tobey Maguire.
and a TNA run. Don't forget the TNA run.
A TNA run and a really awesome rap album. So,
yes.
A lot to look forward to in part 4, so stick around for that.
All right, yeah. Check out Patreon. Check out the t-shirt if you want a t-shirt. Tyler, you got any closing?
Yeah, ideas for Patreon episodes. I think we've got one drunk pro wrestling history on the docket for some point in the future. Just, yeah, share, like, subscribe, all that other good stuff the YouTubers say.
Leave a review. Leave a review. It's highly important for whatever platform you're listening on. We much appreciate it.
All right, get the fuck off the internet and go enjoy wrestling. Sign offline.
Hold on, I just spilled tea all over my computer.
Oh no, that's not good.
Better rip off a bounty, yeah.